Salutations! You have loaded the third episode of Polycast, the official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site at apoulton.net. Today's riddle: what do you get when you add two Americans, a Dutchman, and a Canadian? The Polycast co-host, of course, but you knew that. I'm one of those co-hosts, Dan Quick, known as Dan Q on the forums. I'm the Canadian, eh? With me is Wetter Schneiders, known as Locutus on the forums.
Hey, all.
He's the Flying Dutchman. In the United States is Mackie, known as Makalua on our forums.
Hello.
And Imran Siddiqui, known by the same handle on our forums.
Hi.
Living in New Jersey, it is rumored that Imran is the real devil around here. I've just been an imposter all these years.
But I don't live in New Jersey, Dan.
You don't? Then why does your profile suggest that you do? So you're a liar.
My profile says Georgia, or it should, in the location.
It says something about the Rip brand or something. And I did a lookup on that, and it talks about it being in New Jersey. So,
that was 5 years ago, I think.
Yes, just about. Dan is very up to date. This gives me good hope for this Polycast.
So let's talk about the upcoming Civ 3 now.
And Mackie's the Texas Hold'em Queen, or at least she's good at gambling her good name by being in the company of us three.
And I really got playing that game on Puzzle Pirates, but yeah, that's just me.
That all said, you know, we like adding titles. It makes us look and feel important, or at least the feel part. I'm Shiny Things, Locutus is Pawn King, Mackie's Civ's Mistress, and Imran's Quantity Over Quality. Hello!
Was that Civ's mistress or Sid's mistress? I'm not quite clear.
No.
That was Civ's mistress, actually, but perhaps you know something that we don't. I don't know.
No, I don't. Just making sure I heard that correctly. I was going to ask if you knew something I didn't.
Maybe that girls playing Civ thing is up and running.
There you go.
I don't know.
You might be getting a call soon. We're starting this new venture. We'd like you to be a part of it.
If it involves a web camera, no.
This week in the news, Warlord's Hot Seat Fix, Warlord's Patch 2.08 out, EGE Modding Competition Update, iMod, a Civ 4 mods for Mac users, Warlords for Mac nearing completion, Ages of Man 4 released, Galactic Civilization 2 Dark Avatar Beta coming, and one Civ Many Worlds column. In the modcast, Warlords Worth Getting, how do Warlords traits compare, and why do some Civs never amount to anything? In the Time Machine weeks before the closing of the last Microprose studio 3 years ago. In the interview, the first part with Civilization 3 co-designer and Civilization 4 lead designer Soren Johnson on Civilization Chronicles. And, of course, Bantry Goodness as a free bonus.
Yay! News!
Strange.
Were you working on that for several days? That was kind of neat.
Yes.
Civilization 4 Warlords lead designer Alex Mamedzeris has posted a hotfix to Civ 4 Warlords version 2.08 that corrects a bug with Hot Seat Game, which prevents players other than the first from seeing their technology tree. This fix is for only Hot Seat players and will not affect people who do not play Hot Seat. According to Alex, man, be aware that if you overwrite the original file, your game will not be compatible for multiplayer with people who don't have the fix. This comes just over a week after the long-awaited patch for Civilization 4 Warlords was released by 2K Games. You can download the official correct version from the Poulton directory at poulton.net/dir.
I don't know. Perhaps that's important.
I don't know. I don't think people want to know about that one.
That's true.
Well, you know, especially with that initial confusion surrounding the release.
Yeah,
I wonder where that came from.
excuse me. That BAFTA has morphed itself. It's stuck in my throat for so long. It has a new name.
Okay. Well, I know Wooter was dousing some flames on that original thread where people were wondering whether this was a leaked beta.
Yeah, it wasn't a leaked beta. I don't know, it didn't have copyright protection and it was missing some other things as well, although I still don't know exactly what. But yeah, that was a bit confusing. I guess someone did indeed screw up. I'm not so sure it was indeed... But somewhere along the line, someone released an OCD version, and that's a big no-no. Makes life for the pirates a little easier.
I know what this version was missing. Official sanction. That's what it was missing. Naughty, naughty. You like pirating? You like that? Is that good for you? Okay.
Or somebody.
Come on, you knew that was going to come up sometime. Might as well get it out of the way.
I'm thinking someone at Firaxis forgot their coffee that morning. Like, oh, I'll just upload this now. It's all uploaded. Oh, wait, copy protection. Crap.
That may be important.
Maybe nobody will notice.
So just be sure to check the source that you're downloading it from. So it's between roughly, what, like 64 or 66, somewhere in there, Meg, depending upon whether someone's compressed it or not. Yep. So remember, you play by emailers. Clear out your admin password before upgrading. Head on over to the related thread at apolton.net/forums where it is explained exactly what you have to do, because I'm afraid if I verbalize it here, I'll confuse myself. It's so complicated. But what I will mention is that Firaxis Games software engineer Alex Manzaris, better known as Alex Man, recommends that after you install the patch, to clean out your custom assets folder completely and remake whatever changes you had from the new version 2.08 files. Otherwise, you may miss other updates made by the patch. And then you would complain. And then we would have to tell you you're a stupid head. No, wait, I wouldn't do that. I'd think it, but I wouldn't tell you. I'm like that.
So you say.
You know what the best change is, though? That long-awaited pre-Warlords Kubla Khan Quinn something or other leaderhead swap. I realize something or other is not his exact last name, but, you know. Figured it worked well enough. What's he going to do? Sue me? He's dead. May he rest in peace. I think.
Way to go, 1 billion. Way to go, insult winning 1 billion people, then.
I was going to say, yeah. I think all you're about to have 1 billion people suing you.
Well, someone said they wanted controversy, so there you go. So actually, if you don't like it, you have to blame Comrade Tassadar. It's his fault.
You listen to Comrade.
You made me do it.
You listen to Comrade Tassadar. This show is going downhill fast.
Let's all concentrate now on what Imran said.
What? I said something?
No, that was Dan. Those two sound the same anyway.
Exactly. Eh?
Did you forget your name tag?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oops.
And I forgot to stick my foot in my mouth. Sorry, I better do that now.
I thought it was permanently lodged there.
Maybe we can discuss the actual patch.
I haven't upgraded to it myself because I got one email.
I was going to say that.
One PBM that's waiting on, and I don't know whether we're patching or not. And outside of that, I haven't been playing EMP with Warlord, so it's not a big deal.
Oh, you know, Mackie, we've been playing World of Warcraft, so, you know.
I've been quit off of that for a week now. I love having my life back.
Yeah, and I'm a couple of patches ahead of you guys, so I haven't actually tried it either.
Oh, special.
Gotta rub it in.
Oh, I think he's saying he's better than us. Well.
Well, we knew that already.
Oh, are you trying to become more special than Mackie and I, Imran, thinking saying some nice things to Wutter there, and then he'll let you in on his dirty little secrets?
Well, perhaps.
Well, at least get his prawn bookmark folder, file, whatever.
Hey.
You've destroyed my plans.
So, and then I guess related to this patch release, we have this hot seat fix. Whoops. Is that about summing up? Whoops.
Pretty much. And whoops, who plays hot seat?
Send all hate mail on that comment. So I guess, Locutus, it's about your time to insult somebody. Why don't you just go ahead and do it and get it over with? Not me.
He already claimed superiority over everyone else. Remember?
No, that's true.
I don't need to insult you lowly creatures. I'm above that.
Oh.
Man, people are going to have so much hate mail this time, they're never going to make it through this episode.
I guess we don't want to talk about the patch.
Don't talk about the patch, just get it.
Or hot seat.
Do it now. Now.
Just do it.
As part of the eGames and Electronic Expo, or EGE, that will be held in Melbourne, Australia on November 17th to 19th, a modding competition will be organized for Australian modders, and Civilization IV must be considered as one of the games eligible for this competition. Veteran of Bolt and modder Dale now reports that Civilization IV has indeed been included in the competition.
There's a modding competition.
I see that.
Is anyone going to participate in the modding competition from...
Well, I'm not.
Is any of us Australian?
Well, it's only open for Australians, so that's kind of. People who have Australians on their modding team, which I guess you could easily get.
Quick, get on a team with Dale.
Get an Australian to play your mod once and put him in the credits as a playtester.
Australians are in higher demand on Poly than any other time in its history.
So the deadline for submissions apparently is November 12th. They extended it. For some reason.
Because no one applied.
I don't know why.
No one applied.
Well, I guess they heard that. I guess they heard we were recording this podcast today, and they wanted to make sure that we talked about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
How kind of them.
I know. I thought so.
Woo, free news.
Free news.
The only thing is that the only thing that it says is submission requirements will be announced shortly.
That way. Good if you released it before people actually started modding and then found out, I can't qualify.
Well, seeing as how they're holding this this conference in essentially a week, actually starting in less than a week, maybe they realized, we can't have a lot of, mods to go through, so how are we going to minimize how many we actually accept and have to look at? So there. Submission requirements will be announced shortly. There you go. That works. And did you notice how that while Civ 4 was included, Dale announced that Civilization 4 has indeed been added. It actually isn't on the list on their website. So, I don't know, are they teasing us that Civ 4 has been added? Don't know.
Or they're just not keeping their website up to date?
Teases.
I'm going to go with the teasing part.
Oh, well, that's good.
It fits in better with my delusions.
Of which there are many.
Inside Mac Games has posted a feature that lists some Mac-friendly mods for Civilization IV. A Mac software development kit would allow these mods to be ported to the Mac, but Aspyr Media, publishers of Civilization IV and the Warlords expansion, have not announced plans to release it. The company has also posted an update on their October 2006 newsletter about the development of the Warlords expansion. Quote, work on this addition to the Civ War franchise is also finishing up. It's a great expansion for what has been our best-selling Mac game of 2006, Civilization.
Ooh. Well, our Mac friends will be happy about that, I'd imagine.
Yes, they're going to be able at least to get things like Blue Marble or Age of Discovery.
Yeah, I'm not a... I don't
know
many Mac users.
Yeah.
There are some.
I have the perfect solution for you Mac users who want to play those mods, but you can't. You know what you do? Get some dual boot, right? So then, if you want to play games, you're trying to play a game on a Mac, shoot yourself in the foot, why don't you? What you want to do...
Send all hate mail to Dan.
is boot into X-Piece when you want to play the games, and, from what I've heard, that Macs are better at some things, like multimedia editing. I'm going to take, many first and third-hand accounts that Macs are better for PCs than running that. Not second-hand accounts, though. Those are just hearsay, but at least you're one step ahead of console users.
Uh-oh, send all hate mail to Dan.
Danger man.
I own a console.
Uh-oh.
I have an Xbox 360.
Oh,
and
really?
I'm afraid we lost Imran.
Oh, no. Okay, back.
Oh, yes.
Back to World of Warcraft.
That's where he's really going to go.
And so then with that, I guess Warlords for the Mac is nearing completion.
Indeed.
Tick-tock. Tick-tock.
They say it's coming, but they don't exactly say when, I guess.
On Aspire's website, they actually say November.
They say November.
It says coming this November.
But that's not that specific. I mean, it could be early November, late November.
Well, we're almost in mid-November. It's November 11th when we're recording this, so it's unlikely early November, otherwise we probably would have heard about it by now. But
you would assume so, but those Mac people are kind of weird.
Well, there's an understatement of millennials.
Send all his bills.
You know what we need to include on these polycasts? We need Asher on here to talk about Mac.
Yeah, if we really want to get him, Neil.
I'm not sure we'd ever get to talking about Max if we got Asher on here.
Thank you, Comrade Tassadar, for injecting controversy. This will be the controversy episode. We have a theme now.
Woohoo! Woo! You know what I really feel sorry for are those Linux users out there.
Oh, they can't.
When is it going to come to Linux? Poor Linux.
They're porting World of Warcraft for that.
So misunderstood. I mean, there was Call to Power for Linux, but where's Civ 4 for Linux? I'll cry with you, Linux users. It's okay.
Dan sits in the corner, quietly crying. Poor Dan. Now's the time to drop him.
What's this option here on Imran? Mute microphone. Oh, even better than removing you from the conference. You can still have to participate, but can never say a thing.
As Dan quietly slips to madness.
What, just what? Now?
You just did that?
More, I mean, madness.
You guys would know you're driving me to it.
No, you drove yourself to it.
That's
okay,
right.
You were crazy before we were on the scene.
For a long time, Stan Karpinski maintained that Ages of Mayhem 3 would be the last release for the series of major Call to Power 2 mods that have been dubbed unofficial sequels by many in the Call to Power community. But 2 months ago, he changed his mind and started to develop Ages of Mayhem 4, which he released a few days ago. This latest version has no new features, but is a cleaning up and rebalancing of the game.
Woo!
Yay!
I knew what a review woo-hoo about that.
Well, you know, Stan, he maintained that AOM3 was the last version because he was getting pressure from important people in his life, and I guess they believed him. Good for you.
I guess they believed him.
You can download it from aom.apolitan.net.
Yay!
Woohoo!
Good job.
Stardock Systems, publisher and developer of Galactic Civilizations 2 Dreadlords, has announced that its public beta program for the upcoming Galactic Civilizations 2 Dark Avatar expansion will start on November 16th. The beta program for Dark Avatar is open to anyone who has pre-ordered the expansion. Brad Wardell, the company's founder CEO, has started a multi-part tour of the expansion over on GalCiv2.com. Imran, would you like to tell us what the Dark Avatar beta is about?
Let me go to the conversation I just had with you. It has something to do with GalCiv 2.
Yes, and what's GalCiv 2's full title?
Galactic Civilizations 2.
And after the 2, there's a colon, and then two words?
World of
not
Warcraft.
Not Dark Avatar, that's the expansion. Wait a minute, did that's you say three. World of Warcraft?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, oh.
That's three words.
Oh, Dreadlords, isn't it?
There, yay!
I listen sometimes on this thing.
So where did you go in your browser to find that out?
Nothing. I haven't...
Nothing?
I haven't... I just recalled it from memory.
Oh, what? Your what own memory or your computer's
memory? My own
memory. Oh,
yes, I have Dan, I have that.
Ooh, that is news.
I have to provide you with a way to get one of your own. I think you'll like it.
I'll remember this.
That's the first
Maybe
step.
Maybe I won't. So anyway, I guess the expansion is coming on November 16th, and there are a slew of major improvements, from what I understand. Custom opponents, for example. You can design your own opponents, including what they look like. Don't put my picture on there. You'll scare small children. Okay. And
small children? What about other players?
It's a good thing Mackie doesn't.
I might as well insult myself before somebody else does. It hurts less.
I need an expansion pack for my member.
I need an expansion pack for my life.
Well, perhaps Dark Avatar will help fill that void.
But Mackie, you have so many fans.
It's not where I need an expansion pack.
And I guess there are also tons of new ship parts. Hulls and extra. Tons?
Tons?
Oh, is that a terrible pun? Very funny. Tons.
Yes. Okay.
I guess a ship intelligence center as well. We don't know anything about intelligence here, so I guess we can comment on that.
Intelligence? Wait, what?
Uphold and has received yet another excerpt from the 96-page book, The Chronicles of Civilization, and is packaged with the recently released Civilization Chronicles. This time it's a chapter written by Civilization IV lead designer Soren Johnson about the online Civilization community and the many ways in which a Civ game can be played, from OCC to succession games, for democracy games to Uphold and University, and variants to modding.
We have a new song?
Yeah. The first
Where?
Time in about 6 years. My Soren Johnson.
Oh.
Over at apolton.net/misc/column. Two-part article, one Civ mini features.
Ooh.
It's a chapter from the book that comes with Chronicles.
Ooh. I saw the Soren Johnson name, and I thought we were just begging him to talk to us.
Well, we did.
I didn't realize that was a column.
And actually, it's the first new column since January of this year. Sorry, Maniac, I know you're disappointed not being the last column writer. Sorry you're not special anymore.
Oh, okay. You're still special, but...
Direct all hate mail to Dan.
Okay, so that's another topic we can't talk about, because nobody read it.
I'm jealous.
I read it, but seeing as how it talks about Bolton in part, I
talks
figured
about
maybe
you.
I was a little biased, so I shouldn't say anything.
And it says your name.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
Now we know why it's up there. If it just said Sith Fanatics, you'd be like, nah, I don't think so.
Blah, blah, Sith Fanatics. I'm never reading that. Once again, send all hate mail to Dan.
Do I have to send mail? Can I just send hate towards Dan?
You're not already doing that?
I don't think it's being communicated well enough.
I think you'd put us all on ignore again.
It wouldn't be the first time.
It's probably not going to be the last time.
I'm just counting again how many times he says a poll. One. Three.
Okay.
If you have any news for us, any news tips, contact us with news tips.
Head on over to apolton.net/about, look for Contact Us, or news@apolton.net also works.
And you can also PM.
Yes, you can. Lucutus, Dank You, Snoopy369, and Illuminatus, one of us four, we'll get that up there.
Is the expansion worth getting? Apparently, Chicago Phil, I guess he's the only Phil in Chicago, but nevertheless, basically, he was thinking about getting the Warlord's expansion and wondered whether the features were worth the money. So instead of just being whether the features are any good, he's wondering whether it was worth the amount you have to pay for it.
Note.
We cannot answer this question due to conflict of interest.
Thank you for asking. Please come again.
We would like to waste more of your time later today.
Well, I mean, I think we discussed earlier episodes that, you know, usually in the expansions, the first one is more limited than the second one in terms of, you know, history of Civ expansions, it seems. So... I guess, though, if you want to patch your game, You might as well get it.
Yes, if you're playing online, yeah, you might want that.
Yeah, so if you're having any problems with 1.61, then if you don't get Warlords, and by getting Warlords, I mean buy a copy. Damn pirates.
And
you are stuck with those problems.
And the AI has gotten better because of our good friend Blake.
Unworthy.
And the unique buildings are nice, too.
Yay, Vassal States.
Though I do miss the original song when I clicked on Civ 4. You know, the...
Yeah.
Oh, no, but... Yeah. Well, I kind of like the Warlords song. It's interesting.
Yeah, but
I
like the original one was better.
The original was better, yeah.
That was a really good opening song.
Well, fortunately, you can just go into your Civilization 4 directory and make some choice.
Well...
copy and paste changes,
I guess,
and then you can be happy.
And
you can return to your happy place.
Well, I also have the little CDs with the soundtracks. I got the collector's edition of it, so
yeah,
I can listen to that.
And on that, they actually even have the original soundtrack, which you couldn't use in the game because the author didn't give him permission. But that one's even better. That is on the soundtrack CD. That's a really, really good one.
Okay.
I think anyone in the testing group will agree with me, but unfortunately, if you don't have the CD, you will never know.
You wouldn't happen to be rubbing it in, would you?
No, not at all.
Never.
Now, why would I want to do that?
Send all hate mail. This topic might have to start a list. Keep track.
Take a number.
And we'll promptly ignore it. Oh.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Well.
Yes. Yes, we'll put it in the inbox. Sometimes called the recycling bin.
Shh, Dan, you weren't supposed to say that.
I don't think anybody listens to us anyway.
Well, that could be true.
Sometimes I wonder. Hmm.
There was a topic in the Civ 4 Strategy Education asking how the Warlord's traits compared to the original one, now that we've had some time to step back and look at all the traits and see how good they were comparatively. And of course, the new traits in Warlords were charismatic, protective, and imperialistic, for those of you out there who momentarily forgot.
Or never do in the first place because you've been living under a rock.
Cough, Dan. Cough.
What sayest you?
I like them all equally. They're all winners.
Didn't you actually
cough,
even
Dan,
have
cough?
I have Warlords, yes.
Is it installed? Have you played it?
I have Warlords, yes.
That's all it'll say.
Okay.
Mm. Yes, yes. Well, Imperialistic is fun if you want to fight all the time.
Yeah, but I was playing with the Zulu the other day, and it sort of kind of come back to bite me because of the cheaper settlers. You tend to want to expand a little quicker, and then thump. There comes the
maintenance.
There comes the maintenance cost.
Minus 400. Yeah. What?
And you know, in the Zulu, even have a building that helps that reduces maintenance. Their unique building does that as well as the barracks. But yeah, it was still, oops, I overbuilt again.
Oh no.
Yeah, I know that was a thing with me in Expansive before too. Ooh, look, I can expand. Oops.
You think you learned from your mistakes by now?
No, every time.
Yeah, but I'm not always playing something with Expansive or Imperialistic. Quicker promotions is nice, though.
So, yes, that means you want to employ strategies.
Strategy? Uh-oh.
Oh, strategy. I'm a strategy game? Who would have thought?
Not me. Neither would Imran, because as we established, he has no memory.
Strategy?
Tie-in!
Yay! Oh, wait,
a buy-in would be even better. Do you want to occasionally come on Polycast? Just send all your worldly money to me!
To Dan's retirement fund.
Before Dan gets caught by the Canadian communities for fraud, thrown in prison.
You'll get chased down by Mounties. Anyone else on traits?
They're all winners! Oh, no, wait.
Maybe we should actually play this game before we record a podcast.
Uh-oh.
Play more.
Well, maybe someone could tell me which of the traits is the shiniest.
Oh, that's a good idea. I get
all of them.
I guess if you're charismatic, you're very shiny because you're wearing all those rings and things.
But if you're financial, you have lots of shiny stuff.
Oh, that's true.
Ooh, that's true. Well, there's Dan's perfect leader, financial and charismatic.
Ooh.
Why isn't the forums more shiny, Dan? We need the official logo of Apollo to shine. Then again, that would mean that Dan never reads them again. But then again, that might not be a bad thing. So, I'm torn.
I think he's still in this shiny place.
Yes, and his avatar is definitely not shiny. The Apollo.
No.
It is unshiny. It's a dog.
It is the unshiniest thing
ever. He's not talking.
I'm not disagreeing with you, so I don't have anything to say. And so I guess also on this week's podcast, sieves that never amount to anything. Well, if some people had their way, that would be Canada. Except Canada isn't a sieve in the first place, but I know you're thinking it. You know who you are.
Who are they?
Well, Tokugawa is mentioned.
Uh-oh.
Mr. No, I can't open borders with you. I don't want to trade with you. I'm not talking to you. Then, some centuries later, help, help, I'm being repressed.
Come see the miles and high in the system.
I've got no problems with Tokugawa giving open borders to me, so I don't know what people's problem is.
The problem that he never gives them most of the time?
The problem that you only play on Settler?
Why can't...
Unless he's meaning open border, like he's opening his borders, but...
Ooh.
You know, forcibly, with units.
And we've lost that.
Once again.
Okay, what about why do some sieves never amount to anything? The Forever Man said, you know, there are some sieves that just never do anything. Like he says Tokugawa.
Well, Ross says that he made Tokugawa his religious. Holy jeez, I can't say that on the air.
Why not? You've said everything else. Oh, but it is.
His vassal.
It is blocked out.
Just in a more vulgar way.
It's blocked out on our forums. That could mean anything.
Except isn't vassal six characters? This word that's got, it's only got five asterisks.
I was trying to take the higher.
It could be the first name of the U.S.'s vice president. Wait, no, not five.
Oh. Yeah, it's shorter.
Now Mackie has infected Imran after I infected Locutus.
The horror, the horror.
Well, let's see, they mentioned Tokugawa, and there's also Isabella, which...
Now there's a... Oh.
Yeah. She amounts to something, but it's not the kind of something you want to be neighbors with.
Whenever I'm in diplomacy with her, I'm looking for the would you like to go out sometime button, but I never find it.
She wouldn't go out with you anyway. We're all heathens to her.
Yep.
Day 3, Microprose's last office close. End of an era.
Dum dum da dum dum da dum da dum da dum.
Oh, I guess by that time Microprose wasn't, you know, it was only a shade of its former self, but still a huge name in terms of, you know, strategy computer gaming, among other things, I guess. Everyone loved the old Microprose.
Yeah.
It was definitely sad, and I believe the last office to close was the Hunt Valley office. But at the same time, it was sad, but since Civilization was by then in the good hands of the people at Firaxis, with Civ 1 having been released already, and of course we didn't know it quite yet, but Civ 4 on the horizon, it was sad,
at the same time as it was kind of an acceptance, because I don't think it took anybody
by
surprise.
Yeah, they were going down for a while there.
Yeah.
I mean, perhaps, you know, when Sid and Ryan and they all left to form for Axis, you know, everyone kind of saw the writing on the wall that, you know, well, MicroProse, I mean, and for a while before that, MicroProse had been quietly stagnating for a bit. I mean, it was nowhere near what it was kind of, you know, probably the early 90s or whatnot, so.
Yeah, because it was a steady decline because Sid and Brian left in 96 and this last office being closed in 2003. I'm trying to even think of a MicroProse title after all the Civ, well, not all the Civ 2 expansions, because by then MicroProse wasn't in the picture with that anymore. But I'm trying to think what came after Civ 2 for MicroProse.
Let's see.
I can't think off the top of my head. All titles come before that.
I know they were the ones that picked up UFO Defense, which is better known as XCOM over here.
They did after Orion 2, interestingly enough. You know, those were pretty, you know, that and Civ 2, or that and Civ around the same time. They also did MechWarrior 3 in 99, which was a fairly a decent game in terms of, I guess, in terms of sales and reputation-wise. It seemed after that they just kind of gradually kind of filtered away type of thing. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
And there's a lot of big games from you know, all these classic games that they had released back in the early 90s, Master of Orion, Master of Magic, Colonization, XCOM, UFO Defense.
Oh yeah, because they were really busy there. I mean, you know, we go 85, like three titles in 85, two in 86, 87, 88, 89. Very, very busy. And then,
I guess, you know, when they finally closed doors and that was it. I mean, I guess it was a good thing that they didn't try to do what I guess was been trying to do with Atari, which is you know, they kind of resurrect the name for something entirely different. You know, kind of cheapening the legacy of Atari as it used to be. At least they let it die a nice little death and just ended it that way.
Yeah, that's probably for the better indeed. Although someone might still go back and rape it all over again. So if they can do it once, they can do it again.
Yeah,
somebody out there owns the trademark, so
yeah.
You never know.
Mm. I would guess that it is probably Infogrames/Atari.
Yeah.
Oh, knows.
So when they're done done with Atari, they can rename themselves MicroProse.
Yeah, Infogrames, you know, renamed themselves Atari, and they actually were the ones that took over Hasbro Interactive, which took over MicroProse. And Atari's still around. I mean, I guess they have the name, right? They have the old name, and if they wanted to.
Yes, Infogrames changing its corporate name to Atari. Infogrames, after taking over Hasbro Interactive in 2001, is the copyright holder to most MicroProse intellectual property. And I did remember right, the last remaining MicroProse studio located in Hunt Valley, Baltimore, which was MicroProse's original location, was the one that was shut down in 2003 after completing Dungeons & Dragons Heroes.
And now Hunt Valley is where we have our friends from Firaxis and... I mean, is big, huge games there as well, or?
Yep.
They're nearby. Yeah, they're in Timonium.
Same area.
Mm.
And Breakaway Games also.
Yes. Breakaway was the one that helped Firaxis with
Conquest. Yeah.
Were they the ones that also did Sid Meier's Antietam, or was that another?
They did do something else with Firaxis.
Oh yeah, Breakaway Games actually did do development on Sid Meier's Antietam.
Oh, I'll take your word for it. And they did also do Tropico, which should be at least an expansion for it, which I think many Civ fans will also be familiar with.
Yes, the Paradise Island expansion.
They also did the expansion for the Pharaoh games from, well, the now Tilted Mill, used to be Impressions.
Yeah.
Memories.
good old strategy game.
Before we go to the interview, a little disclaimer. We had a lot of technical difficulties during recording, and the original recording was of such poor quality that it was unusable. Large sections were just inaudible. Fortunately, thanks to the wonders of post-production, we managed to salvage most of the conversation, but you can still clearly hear at times that there are sound problems. Our apologies for this, but this is the best we can make of it with the time and talent we have, but we do feel that the content matter is more than compelling enough to make up for the sound problems. Welcome to this week's interview. I'm once again joined by Maki.
Hello.
Hello. Today we have a very special guest, someone who's originally from, I quote, a little town called Centralia in beautiful Washington State, unquote. And he studied at Stanford University, where he completed a BA in history and an MS in computer science. After that, he joined Electronic Arts to do some QA on Knockout Kings 2000 and 2001. And then he went to Firaxis, where he worked on a little game called Civilization 3, which he co-designed and wrote the AI for. After that, he became the lead designer on Civilization 4, and following its release, he was involved in the development of Civilization Chronicles, which is what we'll be talking about today. I am, of course, referring to Søren Johnsen. Hi, Søren.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. You?
Good.
So what exactly was your involvement in Civilization Chronicles? I mean, how much of the work there did you contribute to?
Well, Civ Chronicles first came up, as an idea early this summer, a way to get, all of the Civ games together in one package. We thought that was a pretty cool idea. So, we spent a few months basically trying to, put together all the goodies that might be, we thought might be cool to include in the package. So that included, a big book which has a history of Civ with interviews with me and Sid, and also with Rochelle and Jeff Briggs and Brian Reynolds, and a history of civilization. And then I wrote an article on the Civ community, included a lot of concept art, a nice book that for someone who's spent a lot of time in the Civ franchise. Also, we made a DVD that contains a lot of various videos over the years involving Civ, as well as a long interview with me and Dorian Newcomb, who was one of the artists who worked on Civ 4 from the beginning, and he was our lead animator. And we gave a GDC presentation earlier this year about prototyping Civ 4. And we basically gave a more extended, polished version of that presentation on the DVD. And what that presentation literally is we show off at Firaxis when we make a game, we prototype it by basically just the very first thing we do is make a playable game and then just keep iterating on it over and over and over again over 2 years. So that presentation, what I did is I saved off a version of Civ 4 every 2 or 3 months. So I just kind of stepped people through each of those versions to show what's changed and how the graphics looked 2 years before we shipped, a year and a half before we shipped, a year before we shipped. And, obviously things changed a great deal. And so that's kind of to see. We thought those would be some kind of nice goodies for the real hardcore fans. Then we also threw in a card game that we designed over the last couple months of the project, and there was just a lot of screwing around trying to get all the versions to work and have the right documentation. We had to scavenge actually the original Civ 1 that I bought many years ago when I was a college student to find the right tech tree, it's also worth noting that the basic source code for the first for Civ 1 and Civ 2 just doesn't really exist anymore. So, there wasn't a whole lot we could do with those products. Whatever we had available is basically what we could put in the product. And so it was kind of, and this is true for a lot of games throughout the last 20, 25 years. People really, when they made these games, people didn't really think about the fact that things should be archived, and people will want to play these games over and over again. And it would be great if if you actually could keep compiling the games and messing around with them. But instead, everything's kind of very ephemeral. So we're lucky to have versions that still work well.
I think you just killed a few people in the Civ 2 community.
Oh yeah,
I've been lobbying to get the source code for years.
It's funny. I think we've said that a few times, but I've seen people that they continually want the source code for Civ 2. Doesn't exist. It could exist somewhere, but we don't know where it exists. There's no one who knows that it's somewhere.
I've also said several times it probably doesn't exist anymore, but they just don't want to hear it.
No, don't destroy my dream.
Yeah. your best bet would be Brian Reynolds, but he's a couple of companies removed from MicroProse at this point, so who knows. I definitely don't know, that's for sure.
Well, that gives him a new avenue to pursue.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the card game? How does it work? What are the rules? How many players is it?
The card game is a two to four player game. It's kind of based around the ancient era of Civ IV. So, you know, you've got swordsmen and spearmen and chariots. You build libraries and temples. You build, you know, the Great Pyramids and the Colossus. You know, the technologies are things like ironworking and pottery and sailing. So it's mostly focused on the early era. If it was similar to any game I could think of, I'm trying to think of what would be similar. Settlers of Catan has a card game that's kind of sort of in the ballpark, maybe. But the basic idea is you have a certain type. There's like six different types of lands available, and those kind of get dealt out to you early in the game, and you get to choose some of them. And from there, those lands produce, you know, food, production, commerce, you know, the traditional, you know, trio in Civ games. And then you can use those resources to buy techs, build buildings, and there's military units also. You can build population, and you basically play through the ancient era. The game ends when the last technology is bought. And there's like, I think, 16 technologies available, and they're exclusive, basically. Only one person can own each technology. So, you know, there's kind of like, you randomly shuffle the 16 technologies and then you reveal three at a time. And, you know, so at any one time you might see pottery, you might see monotheism, you might see engineering. Those might be the three techs that are available. And during each player's turn, they can buy as many of those as they want. So you kind of have to make decisions. Do you want to buy one of those techs, or do you want to wait for one of the later ones, or so on and so forth. And basically, each population point, each technology, each wonder is worth a victory point. So the main goal is to, you know, obviously get as many victory points as possible by the time the last technology is bought. The buildings are basically, and by the way, the technologies, of course, all have, you know, sort of special effects on the game. You know, if you have sailing, you can trade two of one resource for one of any other kind. If you have engineering, you can build more buildings. If you have, I'm trying to think of what some of the other examples are. If you have astronomy, you get an extra card each turn from the main deck, things like that. If you have writing, I think lets you steal cards. You know, literature gives you extra culture, things like that. And then the buildings all have their own special effects. You know, like a temple will give you culture and happiness. A library will reduce the tech costs of various technologies. You know, the Great Pyramids gives you extra resources each turn, things like that. And the Great Walls is like it's like a permanent wall, basically. And the walls, that's why that protects you from attack to a certain extent. And also the buildings also modify the base plot cards. For example, if you have a mountain, the mountain produces two production. But if you attach a forge to that mountain, then that doubles the production. And every turn, you gather all your food, production, commerce. You draw four cards from the deck. You have to discard a card, and then you either you build buildings, buy technologies, or you attack another player. It's kind of hard to describe a card game all in.
Yeah, I think we get the
sitting, but you know, this is the general idea. And in combat, is kind of a sort of a rock paper scissors type thing where some units are good at defense, some units are good at attack, and some units are somewhere between. So you can kind of go offensive or defensive. And if you attack someone and they can't counter your units, you're able to steal their population, which is very important because population are worth victory points, and also population increase the production. You attach population to specific plots, which increases the production, the yield from plots. So it's kind of a way of, you know, capturing and enslaving, you know, your neighbor's people. I mean, also in the game, you build up culture and happiness from your buildings, and whoever has the most of either type is a special ability. So, you know, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
That sure sounds like an awful lot.
Well, it sounds like you guys put a lot of thought into that. Is that the first time you've ever done a card game, or have you designed one before?
This is the first time I'd ever designed a card game that, you know, actually go out. I mean, I remember as a kid, I always loved trying to come up with board games, card games, because it sure was a lot easier than making a computer game, you know. actually, at GDC, I was at a... There's a game tuning workshop that happens during the first 2 days.
Yeah, GDC is a game developers conference.
Yeah,
it's a big conference for game developers.
Yeah, it's a game developers conference, which happens every March. It's usually in California, and there's a workshop that happens the first couple of days of the conference where basically a bunch of designers get together and just kind of bash out game design ideas. And workshops, we work on, you know, trying to turn a computer game into a card game. And the table I was at, we tried to turn Age of Kings into a card game. And I was kind of happy with the mechanic we came up with. And I kind of, once the idea was to turn Civ into a card game, it gave me a chance to kind of revisit that mechanic, especially the rock, paper, scissors gameplay element, you know, which I thought could work well in a card game. And although it actually, in the end, we didn't go so much for rock, paper, scissors as more of a, you know, do you have an offensive hand or a defensive hand? You know, are you going to the offensive hand, obviously, you're taking some risks, but there's bigger rewards, whereas the defensive hand is, you know, you feel like you're in a good position, you just want to solidify your status, you know, that type of thing. And it all comes down to the fact that when you're drawing cards from the deck, you don't get to keep them all. The cards from the deck include things like buildings, units, extra resources, wonders, and so you'll draw four cards, and they're all good. You know, you'll want them all, but you have to discard two in each turn. That's how you make the choice between, you know, do you want to keep your military or do you want to discard your military?
Mm-hmm.
Which can be a, you know, tough decision at times. But we kind of took that prototype. Some other guys in the company kind of also, you know, were trying to experiment with the Civ card game, and they kind of worked on this sort of plot-based idea that, you know, you kind of have these, you know, you had your river, and your coast, your grassland, and your plains, and kind of attached buildings to them. And their game's pretty fun, too, so we kind of combined that building game with the military game that I'd worked on, and that kind of led to the Civ card game. And, you know, we put it all together in a couple months, you know, we bought a bunch of card decks, and a bunch of stickers, a bunch of markers, and just started hammering them out, you know, playing it every day for, you know, quite some time. And, you know, most of the versions weren't fun, but when we hit upon one that, you know, we wanted to play over and over again, you know, we knew then we were finally getting somewhere.
Okay. So how many people did you test that with?
Oh, geez. Probably 8 or 10 people. I mean, not all at once, but probably 8 or 10 people played the game at various points. Usually we play with around 3 people, but, you know, it can go up to 4, and it works well for 2. And you can also play team game, 2-on-2. That works pretty well, too.
Okay. How long did it take to develop the whole game?
I think it was probably around 2 months.
Hmm.
Maybe a little bit longer if you include... Because there, you basically do the rules first, and then there's a period at the end where the question is, like, card design, layout, art design, things like that. So probably the whole thing took around 2 to 3 months.
And that's, for what you're used to, that's a very short period of time.
Yeah, it was kind of a breath of fresh air, actually. I mean, it was you know, over faster than months just disappear into nothingness, you know, when you're working on a video game. I mean, it's just... Civ 4 was 30 months, you know, I mean, it's just a long, long, long process. So being able to work on something that takes, you know, less than a tenth that long is really nice.
So how was this, I mean, other than the fact you had to play with markers and stickers and stuff, how different was this from designing on a computer game?
Well, I mean, the thing about the card game is you can make drastic changes really, really quickly. I mean, we always say that that's an advantage of what we do here at Firaxis. But, of course, anytime you're programming, you can't just, you know, wave your hand and suddenly the whole game changes. But in a card game, you know, you kind of can, really. I mean, you know, you just have to change the way the cards are or slap some new stickers on there or you're done. You know, if suddenly you want to have, you know, technologies in the game, just take an hour to make some technology cards, and there you go, you know. And because we had very different versions of the game early on. The first number of versions, we kept trying to do all of world history. We had the game set up to four different eras, and I thought I had this real clever game mechanic where we basically had four different decks for each of the different eras. You know, the first deck had archers and swordsmen and temples, and the second deck had knights and castles, and then the next deck had riflemen and factories, you know, stuff like that. But that was just terrible. It was just a disaster. The games took 3 or 4 hours, and it was so difficult. And basically, and if you bought enough text, you got to draw from a higher deck, basically, as different people were in different eras, and it just didn't work out at all. So, you know, you can just really change the game drastically when you're working on the card game, which is a lot of fun. The downside is that, it goes fast, but no one's going to give you a year to work on a card game.
Yeah.
So you have to be really critical about your design. You know, you always have to be questioning what you can change and what you can improve. And, you know, it's important to play test computer games, but it's really, really important to play test, you know, card games as much as possible every day. You can't really even take a day off of that. You know, it should be obvious right away that, you know, not only the game is fun, but that you'd want to play it over and over and over again. You know, no one wants to buy a card game and it'd only be fun the first couple times you play it. Hopefully it's the funnest, you know, after you play it about 10 times, you know,
yeah.
You understand all the strategies.
That sounds like quite a complex game, so that's going to take a while to get the hang of, probably.
Well, it's, the rules are about, you know, 3 or 4 small pages. We didn't want it to be too complex, and a lot of the rules are actually described out on the card, so
yeah.
it's not you know, that makes it a little easier to play, but really the game comes down to, you know, there's all these various choices you have to make about which technologies you want to buy, which lands you want to conquer, and you know, which cards you want to keep from the deck, and those are all just right in that sort of sweet spot of, you know, the interesting decisions that Sid always likes to talk about. It can be really hard to decide which cards to discard. Whenever, you know, we're in that situation, we know that the game design must be in pretty good shape.
Okay, I think we have a pretty clear idea of the card game now. You might not be the right person to ask, but to the best of your knowledge, can you tell a little bit about the other things in Civilization Chronicles? Like, what kind of stuff can we find in the book and on the DVD? And how much is original content specifically created for Chronicles, and how much of it has been published before in some form or other?
Right. Give me a second here. I actually have the Chronicles right next to me. The book that comes with the game with Civ Chronicles has there's a history of civilization section, which is basically a really long running interview with Sid and me. Where we talk about, you know, basically everything that has to do with Civ, you know, what Civ 1, Civ 2, 3, 4, and what were the games that inspired us, what were the games that inspired Sid, talking about what, you know, where each of the ideas came from in each of the iterations, you know, what were the things that we thought were successful, what were the things that we thought, you know, didn't work very much, you know, what do we think about 3D, what do we think about multiplayer, modding in the community. It's a big, long interview. I think it came out pretty well. Then there's a big section of concept art from Civ 4. There's a section by Steve Kent on the impact of civilization on gaming. I wrote an article about basically the Civ community. It's called One Civ, Many Worlds, and the idea is I tried to the best of my ability to chronicle everything that the community has done for Civ, or especially Civ 4. You know, all of the different fan sites, all the different ways people play the game, you know, succession games, diplomacy games, pit boss games, you know, all the different types of mods, you know, the scenarios, the total conversions, the graphics, the interface mods. You know, just trying to talk about every different way there is for that people have, you know. Yeah, I find it very interesting, you know, that when we made Civ, you know, we just basically think of, like, usually we think of just that standard, you know, person sits down, you know, plays with a random map and, you know, plays for 10 hours, you know, they're done with it. But there are always, you know, more and more ways of playing Civ that pop up, you know, know, ways that surprise us. And, you know, I kind of wanted to try to write them all down because, you know, I don't know if everyone knows about all of them. It's really remarkable. Then I had some designer notes about the card game. The DVD has a the prototyping session from that was, you know, based off of our GDC talk that I talked a little bit earlier. There's a G4 TV special on Sid Meier, you know, some intro movies, some of the Warlords viral movies. You know, it's just some random bits here and there. There are, and this is really cool. I mean, this would make really great posters for someone with a lot of space, but there is, you know, poster forms of all four tech trees for all the games. This is kind of cool. And then, of course, you know, the games themselves.
Now, these posters, I mean, am I thinking it's the same kind of size that what comes with the games? If you already have them, or are they really bigger? Or?
Well, let's see. I mean, the Civ 4 one is the same. The Civ 1 one is, if you remember the Civ 1 manual, it's basically...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... That's why I asked, basically.
Yeah, it's basically the thing that's in the back of there. But you don't have to actually cut it out of your manual, which is nice. Civ 3 was kind of an odd duck, because I really wanted to get a poster to include with that product, but for whatever reason, that didn't happen. So I'm not sure if in one of the later versions they did finally fix that, but, you know, you see basically the tech tree of Civ 4, you know, it shows the four different eras and all the texts and whatnot. And then the Civ 2 tech tree will be familiar to anyone who had, you know, Civ 2, at least the later versions. I never had the earlier versions. I just had the multiplayer gold edition. So it's basically the same thing that's in that product.
Okay.
So is, for, you know, are all of the older games going to be able to run right out of the box, or is there going to be some tweaking that we're going to have to do to get it to run under XP or upcoming Vista?
All games are XP compatible, no problem. Civ 3 and Civ 4 are definitely confirmed to be Vista compatible. The others, we believe that Civ 1 and Civ 2 are Vista compatible, but it's not. Yeah, basically, like I said, those products kind of are what they are, and we think that they'll work, but they'll all definitely work right out of the box in XP.
Okay, well, that's good news.
Yeah, I mean the Civ 1 version is Civ for Windows, and the Civ 2 version is what you would get in the Civ 2 MGV Multiplayer Gold Edition.
So it is Multiplayer Gold Edition.
That's right.
Hmm.
They also did. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just commenting on that because. People commented on that Multiplayer Gold Edition was missing from this set, but it is Multiplayer Gold Edition, so it's not missing, apparently.
Yeah, no, it's full-on Multiplayer Gold Edition. And Civ 3 is Civ 3 Complete as well, so that's, you know, all of the expansion packs.
Yeah, that we know.
Oh, are you nice enough to patch them all up for us, too? Or are we going to have to download?
I believe for Civ 4 is up to 109, so we'll have to download those for that.
Okay, but the other ones are fully patched as far as there were patches.
Yeah, I mean, the other ones are the exact same thing that would have been in the retail box. And I believe Civ 3 Complete.
Yeah, of course, Complete.
You know, sorry to remember, does Civ 3 Complete, obviously Civ 3 and Play the World are patched up. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah,
Conquest is also patched up. It should be, I believe.
Okay. That was the first part of our interview with Søren Johnsen. Listen to our next episode for the conclusion in which Søren discusses why certain products were not included in the Chronicles package. He reveals a bit about his next project, explains how Firaxis has changed after the Take-Two buyout, what he thinks of Warlords, what other games he plays in his free time, and more. If you have any questions for us, you can send them to, what was it, Dan?
polycast@apolton.net. That's polycast@apolton.net.
And if you really want to humor us, send us a voicemail, and we will play it on the air.
Reach us through our Skype account, the Polycast, by using Skype yourself. The call is free. Download Skype from skype.com, skype.com. You can also phone us if you prefer. In North America, call 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, call 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. No profanity or hate mail, please.
And I'll have you know that Brian Reynolds complimented me on my name, apparently.
Mm.
Yes, I spoke to him
apparently.
Well, I spoke to him on the once, and he said they were thinking of using it for Smack, but then they decided there may be some legal things.
What? They thought you were going to sue?
Oh.
You would sue them, you bastard. Do you still have a transcript of that conversation?
No.
This thread is useless without transcripts.
Isn't the answer, yes.
Yes.
I'll just go type it. Take that out of my archive.
Let me go back to my computer I had back in 97, and I will show you.
I noticed that, Comrade Polycast Thread Necromancer Tassadar writes that, hey, he suggested this title, so if you're wondering what the heck's going on, head on over to Bolton.net/forms, because I'm not going to summarize it here for you. He has suggested that we should do something more controversial than the next one. I say you should become more like the View. The two not be mutually exclusive, because... If you're wondering about this necromancer definition, I had to look it up, I'll admit. But courtesy dictionary.com, it will sound like I'm educated. 1. The practice of supposedly communicating with the spirits of the dead in order to predict the future, and magic in general, especially that practiced by a witch or sorcerer. So now, if you see a post by Comrade Tassadar, he has his own custom title all of a sudden. How did that happen?
Dan,
it's magic.
Your geek credentials are lessened by not knowing what a necromancer is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where have you been that you don't know a necromancer? And we're not talking about vampires either.
You know. Singing the song by Pilot, you know magic?
Yeah, we are ignoring you, Dan.
Something not so. Oh.
Polycast is now put Dan on ignore instead of the other way around.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to the third episode of Polycast, once again the official podcast of a Bolton Civilization site. I'm Dan Q, saying goodbye until next time. Keep on civin', and with me has been Locutus.
Bye.
Mackie.
So long.
And Imran.
Happy civin'.
You pain in the...
I called it first.
Turn the record over, or put in another CD, it's scratched. Or put in another tape, because it's all wound
Someone
up.
Has to know how to distinguish between you and I, aside from the fact that I'm funnier.
Yes.
Thank you, Ciro, for that. I've saved the post. I email to Dan every day.
Funnier looking.
Oh.
Anyway...
Oh,
cheap shot.
Is there any other kind?
Oh, I know we can include a preview of the next episode.
Ooh.
Ah.
Ooh.
Here's a preview of our next episode. It hasn't been made yet. What do you want a preview for? My goodness.
We're having another one.
What did you expect?
We're having another one. That's a good preview.
Record date November 11th, 2006. Edited by Daniel Danku Quick. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV and the Warlords Expansion Pack. Copyright 2006, Bolton Civilization site at Bolton.net.